Hi, everyone, and welcome back to our podcast. I'm Aisha Williams, the founder and CEO of ImpactVest, and we are here with three great CEOs at our Q1 2024 CEO Roundtable. The title of our roundtable and focus is Leaning Forward and Leading Change. We're excited to speak about how our CEOs leaning forward here in 2024. We're almost at the end of the quarter. What are the future trends that we see in business today? So let's start with introductions. Nyasha, I'll start with you.
For inviting me. My name is Nyasha Chasakara. I'm an entrepreneur based in Zimbabwe, where I run a solar energy company that is looking to change the face of the industry. We want to bring in access to everyone that is in need of power. And in Southern Africa, that's over 600 million people that don't have access to electricity. We have been doing this since 2017, and we hope to continue doing it into the future. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Nyasha. It's a pleasure to have you here with us. And Vanessa, I'll go to you next.
Thank you so much for having me. My name is Vanessa Chislett. I am the founder and CEO of Shuso Tea Company, located in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I have been very slowly bootstrapping and starting my company since 2011. And then in 2019 is when we took some major steps of growth and expansion. We started building out our advisory board and scaling our wholesale operations, which has been really exciting. The tea industry is very ancient and old, and it crosses almost every single border on our beautiful pale blue dot and connects nations together. So yeah, thank you for having me here.
Thank you, Vanessa. It's also a pleasure to have you here with us. We have such a wide range of industries here, and I'm sure we're going to find the connections and synergies. And Olukbenga, I'll go to you next.
Thank you very much, Aisha, for organizing this meeting. My name is Olukbenga Abijirin, co-founder and CEO of Calibotics, based in Nigeria. We started the year COVID started in 2020. And we're essentially a robotics and AI company trying to develop our products in that field to better the lives of Africans. We started out in education, and our latest project right now, from education, they went into e-waste management, and we're trying to transition to the next horizon right now. So thank you very much, and we're happy to be here. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you, Olukbenga. Yes, we're also happy to have you here. It's so interesting. All of you come from different industries and different backgrounds, but we're all facing the same market, right? And so the first question that I have for all of you is, how are you leaning forward and what future trends do you see on the horizon where you can seize opportunities in your industries? And so I'll start with you, Nyasha.
Well, thank you, Aisha. Also, it's an interesting question in so many respects. I think in my industry, which is the solar energy industry, we are actually finding that there's a lot of change, climate change for starters. We are seeing a lot of challenges to do with droughts, to do with power shortages. As you know, if you look at Southern Africa, for example, we are really much, very much dependent on hydropower, especially for countries like Zimbabwe and Zambia. We rely on hydropower. And so when we have a drought like this year, it then means that electricity is a problem. So it's quite interesting that, yes, we have these challenges, but for companies like SolarPro, this is an opportunity to actually change lives through solar. As SolarPro, I think we have been building solar solutions that plug in the gaps that are being created by the shortage of electricity. So it's a very fitting question at this time, where because of the crisis that we face in terms of energy and food shortages, we are playing a part in trying to actually improve the, people's lives through electricity provision for homes, and even for irrigation purposes on the farms.
And that is something that we see across industry, the effects of climate change, and how do we actually mitigate those risks through our companies, through partnerships. It's a topic that's on all of our minds. And Vanessa, what about you? How are you leaning forward and looking at future trends in your industry and looking at the opportunities that you can seize in these trends?
Yeah, thank you. The tea industry is quite complex because you're dealing with global logistics, global supply chain, a lot of the systems and structures along the value chain from garden to cup have been in place for hundreds of years. And so to disrupt our industry, I think that is a huge part of the reason why it's taken me a longer time to build my brand, because even 10 years ago, the consumer demand for ethical and sustainable sourced food and beverage in North America, it wasn't something the consumer was even really conscious or aware of. You know, we have these big box grocery stores and people don't second guess where their tea is coming from or what's in it or how many hands along the supply chain it has taken, right? So for me, my dedication to creating a more ethical and sustainable supply chain and value chain has also come with my desire to cut down those points of contact so that not only we're getting a more fresh and more flavorful product at the end of the day, but we also understand that the money that we are spending by sourcing is going directly into the hands of the farmers and the workers, and that a lot of the issues, not just with supply chain, like if you take the average tea company, you know, let's take Lipton, for instance, their blend of black teas, which it is a blend specifically tailored, it probably has about 10 to 15 different points of contact from growing to the final product that's in the grocery store shelves. So that alone is just so horrible for the environment from a logistics perspective. This tea has traveled all around the planet to multiple different countries just to get someone's cup. That just doesn't make any logical sense, right? And you're not getting a fresh product at the end of it. But then you have to really look at some of the other issues that are interwoven within the tea industry. And we have to be honest about, you know, the slave trade, the human trafficking, the exploitation of every single country that was victim to the English shipping routes, you know, and we're still seeing that today, which is really heartbreaking. And so for us, I think the number one way that we are addressing that is by consciously and ethically sourcing, knowing exactly where our products are coming from, and knowing that we are giving back to those tea growing communities who have been exploited more times than not along the value chain. But I think as well, being in Canada, being in North America, the other part to that is the education of our consumer. So because these major monopolies have held such a grip on the industry, it's made it really hard for the consumers to even know where their products are coming from because of lack of transparency. And, you know, companies don't want to describe the amount of contacts that are within that supply chain. They don't want to talk about where the products are even coming from, especially if there's dark and nefarious reasons for that. So we're in the process right now of building out our Shiso Tea Academy, which is going to encompass one of the most comprehensive and extensive education programs, not only for our end consumer, but for our wholesale partners and contracts that we have along the way, because everybody needs to be educated and we need to be honest about the impacts of the tea industry on our human history globally. So thank you.
Yeah, you brought up some excellent points, and I think we're going to circle back to what you spoke about supply chains and value chains. And so that's really important that I think we'll speak about in our next topic here, right? What do you think, Olugbenga, for your industry about leaning forward and seizing opportunities? I think really great points brought up by Miasha and Vanessa. What do you think about what they've said and how it relates to your industry?
Okay, all right. Thank you very much. I suppose the first thing is realizing that times have changed and perhaps understanding the kind of changes we're talking about. There used to be a time, you know, I'm old enough to remember when I was very young. Yeah. You wanted to post a letter to your friend. Then you write the letter on a piece of paper, put in an envelope. You go to the post office, you buy a stamp, you stick it on it, you know, and then you post it. And hopefully your friend should get it between a week or two, depending. All right. And after that came the email, things were faster. And even after the email, we had instant messaging, which doesn't wait for you to get back to the office. You can get it on the move, right? And what has happened is businesses and even our lifestyles have had to change. The way we do business has had to change because of these changes, right? So I'd say a lot of the changes that have taken place, they are primarily external, all right? And of course, a lot of them have been accelerated because of the pandemic. So you have you have working from home, you know, some people are trying to pioneer that, but, you know, they met some resistance, but when no one could leave their home, everybody had to do that, right? So the point I'm trying to make is that we have these external forces. And I think the most important thing is to realize that some things have changed. You need to understand that, all right? The rate at which information is being disseminated, the rate at which different parts of the world are realizing, you know, just like what my colleague was mentioning, you know, you now have people thinking globally, like he's talking about 600 million people in Africa without access to power, all right? In the past, your thinking was essentially local, right? But now you can think more broadly, you know, just a couple of days ago, there was this lawsuit brought against Apple, you know, and the ripples is going around the world. So the main thing I'll mention is the first change is a change in perspective, in realization, because of what indeed has changed. The world has changed. The expectations from players, you know, be it about human rights, be it about sustainability, be it about climate change, you know, a lot of things have changed. And, you know, the first step is to realize that things have changed and we have to adapt. Thank you.
Yeah, also a very great point, because I think the rate of adaptation is faster than we've ever seen it happen. And I think as CEOs, you have to somehow navigate in the midst of rapid change. And like you said, global has become local, right? We're like we are here speaking today. So it's amazing on one hand that we have access to so much information, but it's almost widened the gap, right? And now, like you're speaking about, Olugbenga, that there are hundreds of millions without power, but yet we have AI and we're closer than ever, but somehow more distant than ever, right? And so there are gaps that are becoming more apparent in terms of information, in terms of access, that as we continue on, I think we're really starting to see it. We started to see it last year, but this year it's really very prominent in terms of the wide gaps in information. And like you brought up, Vanessa, and supply chains, right? There is a lack of education, right? And so kind of these wide gaps that we're starting to see, how do we close the gap in terms of access to information, access to resources, because the rate of acceleration is just going to continue. It's going to get faster and faster and faster. So how do all of you see yourselves as CEOs with your companies actually closing those gaps? And I'll go to you, Nayasha, for that question.
Okay. Yeah, so I think you raised a very important issue, which is our connection to the environments in which we are operating in. More than ever, I think, a lot of CEOs in the past relied a lot on support structures around them, especially when you look at, you know, trying to see what is happening. But we tend to see now that as even as a CEO, you must actually be connected to your clients. You must know what's happening to be able to be responsive. In our case, I think this has changed the way we even provide services or products in the market. I think at the end of last year, SolarPro introduced a rent-to-buy program, essentially driven from what we were seeing in the market. So the market was sort of not very responsive in terms of taking up solar. And we tried to see what's happening. Why are people not actually, you know, going solar, you know, in the way they used to? And we saw that in a lot of times, it was the fact that they had actually didn't have the capacity to do so. I mean, the cash outlays that are required for one to take up solar are so huge now. They were much more than what you know, the customers could afford. So we then launched the rent to buy to make it easier for our customers to actually go solar. And with that, we actually saw a very good response from the customers. And it's very good to see that sort of response coming through, because it then also helps us to really accomplish our mission, which is to solarize everyone, to make sure that everyone who deserves to get solar does so. And we do so through the innovation that we have come up with. I mean, such innovation may look very simple, but, you know, in some cases, it's very difficult for you to actually know what the market is missing and what your customers are missing. And that's very important for us. I think going forward, we will continue to be close to the market and to see and read, you know, the vibes or the direction that the market is taking.
Right. And so maybe with all of this rapid progress, it calls for CEOs to be very close to the market, right? To really listen to customers and to listen to their concerns, what they would like to see on the horizon. So I think it's a really interesting pivot, right, toward even more of the customer experience and just to be closer than ever to your client base. And do you find the same thing, Vanessa, in the tea industry?
I think in my almost 20 years now being in the tea industry, one of my favorite things about the light side and the positive side of tea, having been a commodity that created globalization before all this advancement in technology and industry and supply chain came along, you know, coming back to the roots of what tea originally was, it was originally discovered by Buddhist monks in Yunnan, China, and it was incorporated into their meditation practices. And, you know, as I look into all of the different growing communities and consuming communities, because ultimately tea is the second most consumed beverage in the world next to water, the nuances of cultural expression and cultural ceremony that is just embedded in the spirit of what tea is one of the most beautiful things that brings us back into our humanity and back into connection with self, and thus also back into connection with one another. And so, you know, we look at all the trends that have happened over the last 4 years, and a lot of the isolation, separation, disconnection, while at the same time we're watching technology just connect us and embed us into this relationship with it even more. I think tea is this like counterbalancing beautiful weight of being the bridge itself. You know, I don't necessarily even have to make an effort to try and be a bridge, because tea is the bridge, right? The beverage that I'm selling, all the different botanicals, all of the healing properties that are incorporated into the DNA, the genetic coding of each of the different botanicals and teas that we sell is the bridge, you know? And, you know, in light of all of the horrible things that have happened in the last few years, we've also seen this massive shift of people coming back into the consciousness of where is their food coming from? How is this benefiting my body? Is it improving my life and well-being? And we've seen massive, massive, massive growth and expansion and spikes in tea. And I think that is also, we're also seeing this trend over the last 5 to 10 years of coffee drinkers transitioning to tea because of the health benefits that tea brings. And so, you know, after very slowly just watching the industry, the food industry as a whole, shifting and changing into more of a holistic value chain, but then the consumer stepping into that shift and change, it is our consumers, it's our tea drinkers that are the ones that are making the change. And I think one way that I've made some shifts and changes within the foundation of Shiso Tea is specifically creating new spaces and moving in those social platforms and creating this back end of a social space to bring people together, right? And I think that's where Shiso Tea is expanding and growing right now, is we are trying to expand these different spaces to be this hub, to be this like meeting place, like a tea house, you know, but for the global community. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting. We get to find the synergies and find the connections between the solar industry, the tea industry, but it really is about listening to customers, being on the ground, paying attention to future trends, sometimes just listening to your customers tell you what they want. And like you said, Vanessa, looking at changing preferences, and that starts to inform you about what's on the horizon. And Olugbenga, do you find the same, that due to the rapid transformation in terms of technology and future trends, that there is an emphasis on listening to your customers more and being much more on the ground in terms of anticipating future trends?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So with all these accelerating changes, all right, you're thinking about things in two categories. Number one is, you know, keeping up with the changes. And number two is surviving. Yeah, because you have certain industries being decimated and some other ones being created. Yeah. So I think the most important thing is, like the other two speakers have mentioned, you know, there has to be a fundamental change, you know. So due to all these pressures, we need to change. We need to change from the way we approach things. We need to change from the way we think about things, the speed at which we move, yeah. So of course, on the one hand, you know, a company has got to survive, right? You are thinking about, you know, how do you remain relevant and how do you future-proof your business, right, so that it's still relevant in the future, all right? So for example, you know, Vanessa was talking about, you know, coffee drinkers transiting into tea drinkers, yeah? Imagine she was a coffee grower and that trend wasn't in her favor, but then she needs to survive. She needs to make payroll. Right, you know, so things are important. So I think on the one hand, you know, we have a lot of pressures when it comes to things from the customer perspective. Yeah, customers are becoming, you know, even customers are changing, right? They're beginning to ask questions. Yeah, they're more, you know, they're more health conscious. And some of them are beginning to ask questions that, where are my products, you know, that these products I'm consuming, where are they coming from? Yeah. Am I sure that your suppliers, right, aren't using forced labor or child labor and stuff like that here? So beginning to say things like, you know, boycotts of certain products simply because one particular player along the value chain or the product creation, right, isn't in conformity, yeah? And of course, now that we have a proliferation of information, people can find out things like that very fast. All right. Then on the other hand, All right, you're trying to keep up with technological trends, and you're also having to keep up with a lot of increased regulatory oversight. All right, so in our field, for example, that has to do with robotics and AI, there has been a lot of, you know, a lot of issues with AI recently. Yeah, there was an interview that happened recently with the CTO of OpenAI was being asked specifically about some of the data used to train some of the AI, right? I watched a portion of that interview. I wasn't sure if it was a trick question because the CTO couldn't answer directly, but then people are now beginning to ask questions like, where did you get the data to train your AI? Was it obtained legally? Was it with consent? You know, but of course, most of this data were gotten from open sources, but now that they are part of the constituents for AI models, people are beginning to ask questions about data sources that weren't asked before they were being used to create AI models. All right. So, you know, yeah, so with that, there are two considerations. On the one hand is, how do I keep up so as to remain relevant? And this is very important because talking about AI, for example, most of the AI being used by the most popular AI company in the world right now, I think OpenAI because of ChatGPT, right, is based on the Transformer model, which was invented by Google, but then it was commercialized by OpenAI. And it seems to us that Google, the inventor, is now playing catch up. All right. So the point is just, on the one hand, you need to keep up and remain relevant. On the other hand, how do you stay compliant with regulatory oversight? Right. Just a couple of days ago, I think the European Union, if I am right, they passed the first comprehensive set of AI laws, the first of its kind in the world. Yeah. We talked about, you know, the proper and improper use of AI, certain products that are banned, and even fines and penalties for those that don't do that. So very soon that is going to become mainstream. So on the one hand, you know, so yes, I just wrote like 4 points into one, right? On the one hand, you need to survive, right? You need to, you know, I mean, Vanessa is lucky. Customers are transiting into your industry. You could be a coffee grower and it's the other way, and still you need to survive. Two, you need to listen more to customers because customers are becoming more aware and are beginning to ask questions and things like that. Three, you need to remain relevant. You need to keep up with the pace, right, and create products, at least the ones the customers want. And number four, you need to keep up with governance, enterprise risk, and compliance, right? Because, you know, there's more scrutiny into, you know, and more scrutiny into technologies, particularly AI. You know, so, you know, yeah, so AI is new. AI can do a lot of interesting things, but, you know, the scrutiny, perceptions, and all that are changing too. So I think that is kind of like the dynamics that we have in our industry.
And excellent points that you brought up, the need to survive, right? And that is another point that is not spoken about enough when we speak about the rapid progress of technology and CEOs navigating that climate. There are lots of benefits and opportunities, but you still have to keep up, right? And so, like you were saying, Alec Benga, those are lots of changes that you may have to make to your company very, very quickly, because the market starts to dictate to you how you have to position and change and navigate. Staying on that note, how do you see yourselves and your companies having to adapt in the midst of this technological change that we see? You brought up AI, the regulations around AI. There's lots of technological progress. How are you positioning your own companies to take advantage of this rapid change while also keeping in mind that it requires your company to adapt, right? And so we may not have the same company at the beginning and end of the year naturally, but with all of this rapid progress in the market, we start to see a lot of changes internally within companies having to adapt and having to survive, right? So how do you see this within your own companies, knowing that you have to adapt very, very quickly to market changes at the moment? And I'll go back to you, Ayasha.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I think what Olubanga just described was very instructive in terms of what we are going through. As a company, I think we are embracing the use of AI and actually ensuring that our customers, because our customers are embracing it, they are way ahead of us in most cases. And you then find that your customer actually knows more than you in terms of some of the products that are available. And so it's not good just to play catch up in most cases. And I think at SolarPro, we are actually introducing our first AI-enabled sort of inverter and solar solution, which is coming through in the next couple of weeks. And the good thing about technology generally is even our suppliers of products, they are actually coming up with these new products that incorporate these technologies. So as a company, if you are not really in the market and you are not aware of these products, you get left behind. And in some cases, that really then becomes the reason why you fail, because if you are not really receptive and forward-looking, you tend to get left behind. So we are very excited, I think, generally with the future when it comes to what is happening in our industry. The trends that I was seeing at the Solar Show, which was in Johannesburg, where I was attending, in the last few days, we're actually seeing solar companies competing to bring in the latest technology, bringing in modular systems that allow for someone to start small and then, add more power as their sort of circumstances change in terms of maybe availability of funds. We're seeing some new products that are embracing AI. So, for example, I mean, just to be practical, in the past, your inverter and battery system was not aware of the weather changes, or is it a cloudy day, or is it a sunny day, and so you just continue using your power without really having any control of whether you would have your battery still full in the night. Maybe because it was a cloudy day, you are now AI then, helps you to actually set some settings that allow your inverter to make use of grid power when it's available, make use of solar power when it's available, and save on your battery. And some of these things are just learning from your usage patterns. I mean, recording what you are using on a particular day and just making sure that you stay within those areas. So I think going forward, we are going to see more technology like this being made available. And I think as CEOs, maybe in the industry, it's up to us to be able to be, one step ahead in terms of knowing what is available and feeding back maybe to the suppliers of the equipment to continue being relevant to to our customers, who I think unfortunately customers now have more access to information than we would ever imagine, or that we're not comfortable with your customers actually coming to tell you that, look, I need this system. Because they know it's there. If you don't know about it, you might look very silly in front of your customer. And so I think we'll continue to, obviously, as a company, continue to attend trade shows, continue to give feedback to our suppliers to create better products for the customers. Thank you, Aisha.
That's always the mission, to create better products for customers. And that's a great point, that because there is so much information that is available, clients and customers often can tell you what they want, right? And so it puts a lot of pressure on a company and a CEO to constantly be able to provide those kind of high quality goods and services with the availability of information becoming more and more prevalent and faster, right? Vanessa, what about you and your industry? Do you find the same, right? That there is more pressure to provide higher quality services because of maybe the feedback that you're getting from clients and customers?
Yeah, I think when it comes to any CPG, especially a health and wellness product, there has been a greater and greater demand for transparency along the supply chain. And so one of the things that we have planned out for this year is to revamp our entire website. We want to actually look at using blockchain to create that transparency and traceability within our supply chain so that we can show that information to our customers, right? And so one of the very practical ways that that's going to look like on our website is, say you bring up one of the beautiful teas that we have and it lists all of the ingredients, but then it also traces back and gives a carbon footprint of each of the botanicals and where it's come from and the impact that that specific tea has on the planet, to really give people an understanding that, okay, I've got a chai here, but this specific chai has 10 to 15 different ingredients. And they're not necessarily all coming from one location. They're coming from several different countries across the globe. And so that level of transparency, I can see how AI and blockchain can really benefit that transparency and communicating that information to the consumer. So we, on one hand, are looking at ways of using those tools, but personally as a CEO, I've also taken a step back just to observe what's happening when it comes to artificial intelligence, when it comes to all these advancements of technology. And simultaneously, on the back end, a year ago, we made major changes to our law firm, our bank. We transitioned to a gold-backed local credit union to pull away from the more big centralized banks because we're seeing technology impact so many different layers of our businesses, to from the financial side of things to the actual supply chain to the communication and information we're offering. And then one other transition we made is we pulled everything off of Google, because for me, the security and privacy of our information being owned by an entity that has had a lot of ethical problems, and we've started to see all of those issues come to surface, and that information is being provided to us. The truth of some of the atrocities that these big tech companies have been making are coming to light now. And so to step into a place of wisdom and being like, oh, is our information protected? Is our customers' information being protected? How do we create that security around the information that we have? So yeah, we pulled everything off of Google, transitioned to Proton Mail. We've started looking at more encrypted platforms and options for us to transition to. And that is also one of the really cool things about seeing these advancements of technology, is we are seeing companies and CEOs who are building new alternative ways that do have people and planet at the heart and center of their practices. And they've incorporated ethical practices into what they're creating and building because they've seen a lot of these issues come to rise. So technology and artificial intelligence is one of those things that it is a very fine line, and it requires a lot of wisdom right now to be able to navigate what choices we make and how we set up the foundation and structure of our companies to ensure the longevity.
Right. Because it's really about taking the best practices of AI, being able to look at your own company and see how it can be best applied to your own products and services, and to be really conscious, I think, about the uses of the technology just in your own company. And Oleg Bingo, do you find the same in terms of having to maybe adapt to the needs of your client base based on rapid technology and maybe having clients and customers come to you and say, well, we've done the research and this is what we want. So what are some of the experiences that you've had right in the midst of this technological change?
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Yes. You know, a lot of the changes that has taken place in the tech space, some of them affect us directly. Yeah. There's so many times that we're thinking of building something, you know, and, you know, you put on the TV and you see some engineer, you know, halfway across the world tinkering with the same thing. All right. And there is this, you know, so it makes you to, you know, try to think further along, right? It makes you to try to identify patterns early on, you know, and trying to identify, try to recognize the trend, right? And I'd mentioned, grew up, you know, with a lot of, you know, reading about science fiction and things like that. And it's crazy that a lot of those things that were science fiction yesterday, they are now like the reality today. All right. We have technologies now that are almost indistinguishable from magic. All right. So I just mentioned one experience that we had, right? So 121 particularly, we built a robotic arm that could play a physical game of chess, all right? Of course, it wasn't until we're halfway into the project that we discovered that others had built that type of technology before, yeah? As that when we built it, we hadn't seen it before. So a lot of the thinking, you know, a lot of thinking we put into it was quite new, you know? But then we had this situation where, you know, so after building that, you know, because, you know, he had this computer vision system that was looking at the chessboard. And then, you know, when someone makes a move, right, you know, it records the move, takes it back into the system, tries to interpret it, you know, run it through a chess engine, predict what to play, right? And then, using inverse kinematics, you know, sends instruction to the robotic arm to pick a piece from here and put it here. But of course, that particular technology, we're able to repurpose it for our e-waste management system, in which instead of identifying chess pieces, yeah, it was now trying to identify e-waste, that's electronic waste, in the midst of general waste, and trying to pick that and separate it. All right. But then also we realized that one of the things that we've done was to try to make AI and robotics work together. All right. So with all this advancing change, one thing it led to is that we thought about, think of all those who are into robotics, who are trying to navigate this area of merging AI and robotics, you know, because it's not as easy as it sounds. Yeah. Because AI is all in code. Robotics is a physical manipulation of objects. One of the things we came up with is, what if we built a system that can make any robotics engineer, robotics student, or robotics enthusiast to easily connect their AI models in the cloud and connect it to their robot? That is, you know, kind of like create that interface, you know. So, I mean, that's a prototype we're working on right now. And what we're trying to do is, instead of us just building one product for ourselves, we're trying to build a system that others can use. So if you're a robotics engineer and you're trying to navigate, you know, that difficult, you know, and that difficult angle of, you know, merging your AI with robotics, you can use our system, you know. So that's one of the things that we've built. And interestingly, you know, as we're doing it, a paper was released by Google late last year. And they were doing one research in that direction, you know. So that made us say, okay, I mean, it was just a paper. We're like, okay, fine. That means we're on the right track, you know. But then, based on the advances in technology and the fact that we had been able to successfully merge those two, so we're thinking of creating a general platform so that anybody who wants to do that can get that done as fast as possible. So I think that is one key area in which advances in technology has made us to try to notice patterns, preempt the market, and try to run, you know, a few miles forward, create something that hopefully will be useful to a wide, a wide array of customers and users.
Great answer. And I think it brings us to our last question here. We've had such a great conversation. If you were to advise younger entrepreneurs and students building their companies and wanting to lean forward and anticipate changes in the market, what advice would you give them? Mayasha, I'll start with you.
Okay. So I think the younger people that are looking to go into entrepreneurship at the moment are much more lucky than we were. If I look back, the access to information that they now have, access to tools, access to, you look at OpenAI, you look at Bard, AI technology all around them. My advice to them is to make use of these technologies and embrace them, because they are lucky to have even more tools than we had. In a lot of cases, we had to actually try and fail. These days, with some of these tools, they are actually making it much easier to quickly try things and fail faster and find the winning formula to coming up with products. So my advice is to the young people is to embrace the technology. I recall when I started out, trying to use computers, when I first came across my first computer, my worry was that I would break it by doing certain things. If it was like a little bit of changing settings, I was scared of doing that. But these days, you have my little boy actually working on a robotic board, which costs less than $5 so the fear of failing, is not that much compared to what we had at the time when we were having these computers. They were costing $1,000 or even $2,000, which was a lot of money. But now young people can actually get access to cheaper technology that allows them to learn faster and develop faster.
Yeah, it's a great point. It makes me think of an article. I actually think it was the OpenAI CEO who said that future companies will maybe only have one person, right? Because of all of the tech tools that we have today. So it'll be really interesting to see the future companies and to see how they start to change company structures. Vanessa, what about you? What advice would you give maybe student entrepreneurs wanting to launch their companies in the midst of this technological change?
I would say, to quote Simon Sinek, find your why. Find your soul's purpose and why you want to do what you want to do. And make sure to have that be your compass rose, your heart center, that you make every single decision based off of that. And that every decision, no matter what area of the company or business or operations, whatever it is that you're building, make sure to find your soul's purpose and that everything that you do comes into alignment with that. And I think, there's nothing wrong with the merging of technology with business to make things easier for us. But I think also it's really important to stay rooted and grounded in our humanity and what connects us to our soul and also to our community and the people around us. That would be my piece of advice.
Great advice. I think it's the why, right? I think for every entrepreneur, it's sometimes only the why that will get you to the next step, right? And so it's really, really important to know why you are launching your business and scaling your business and to do what you feel called to do. And Olubega, what about you? What advice would you give younger entrepreneurs or those just starting out in entrepreneurship?
All right, yes. I think Inyasha and Vanessa make very great points, and that summarizes it essentially, all right? They might not sound like much to someone now, but someone who has been in business for a long time, yeah, you know, you come up, I mean, you know, you get to realize those things, you know, and these are the most important things. I suppose, you know, building on that, I'll just add simply that be patient with the science and be bold with the engineering, right? So when it comes to a lot of all these things, you have principles and then you have practices, right? The principles are relatively fixed. So the equivalent is science, you know, chemical reaction, you know, hydrogen and oxygen react together to give us water, gravity, things like that. Yeah. You know, they are relatively fixed and haven't changed much, right? So that's like the science, that's the principles. All right. And you have the principles when it comes to marketing, HR, finance, operations, IT, strategy, vision, and all that. But then you have the engineering, which is that the practices, you know. So even though science is relatively fixed, right? You know, the practices, the things we do, the way we go about them, they change, the tools we use, all right? And a lot of people, they make the mistake of thinking that because some practices change, we can do away with some of the principles that got us there in the first place. But that's not so, all right? I suppose the same business acumen, ingenuity, that was used by some of the business moguls of the past, you know, be it Vanderbilt, you know, or Rockefeller, you know, it's still the same principles used centuries later by newer, in newer entrepreneurs like Zuckerbergs and Elon Musk, right? So there's the principles, both of business generally, both of impact in creating change, all right? You need to be patient with the principles. You need to learn them. But be bold with the engineering, yeah? The way you apply them, the way you think, the way you think of multidisciplinarity, the way you think of cross-pollination of ideas and industries to create new products, all right? But it turns out that a lot of people just want to create new things for its sake without thinking about the underlying principles, right? And that is why we have a lot of all these movements nowadays, because, you know, people are thinking about human rights, thinking about inclusion, thinking about sustainability, climate, right? Other things you consider along the way, realizing that you're creating business, you're building products people would love to solve problems and not just for its sake, all right? So I'm not talking about science and engineering per se. It's just a method. I mean, just a metaphor to show that the principles, the science, they remain relatively fixed, and you can be, might be surprised that it may remain relevant for hundreds of years, even though the practices, the engineering, how we implement them, what we do, fast nowadays, yeah. Even though it looks that way, but those principles still remain the same. So, be patient. Be patient with the science, the principles, learn them properly, and then be bold with the engineering, the practices, you know. Reach for the sky and with some luck, hopefully you'll create a great product that will be used, by a good number of people around the world.
Yeah, and that's such a great point to keep in mind, that the principles, like you said, Olubinga, have remained the same for hundreds of years, and maybe our tools have changed, but maybe what is happening too, it's more of a focus on us as people and how can we actually think beyond our own industries and our own companies, and maybe I think that kind of focus of business is changing because we're realizing we are all working towards the same goal, no matter what industry we're working in. We all want a better world in some way. So how do we actually build it? And how do we work with others and how do we form partnerships, right? Because we're all thinking about kind of past our own companies and kind of we're looking into the future and seeing, well, what kind of world do we want to leave, right? Because, you know, we're speaking about the younger entrepreneurs coming up. We're just kind of building the steps here, right? And we're building the pathways. And that's really the question, kind of what legacy do you want to leave with your company and how do you want to kind of make your stamp in the world and say, you know, I built something of value for my customers and clients and I built great partnerships. And so it's kind of really thinking beyond, right, your own company and clients and saying, well, what is the real purpose here? And so that's what's interesting, I think, about the technological progress that is happening today. It's really making us think, well, how can we actually leverage all of these tools to build a better world? And I'm really inspired by all of you. I think you're all really leaders in your fields and you're really leaning forward and great examples for what it looks like to be very bold and to have a very bold vision in the market, right? So thank you all for joining us today. It has really been a pleasure to discuss, and I'm very inspired by your visions and your missions, and we're very happy to have you as members and to cheer you on. And we're all on the same path here, right? And so I'm very, very happy to speak to you all today.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure connecting with everyone.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it was really, really a pleasure. And so I'm sure we're going to have another CEO roundtable. And I'm sure there's going to be another trend that we're going to speak about. There's so much progress in the market and changes. But really a great conversation. And thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.